Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. Okay, we are very nearly out of the XAP directory. We'll probably finish it today, and I might take a quick peek at XFCE. We'll see if we have time. First one in the list today is XLockMore. This is a screen locker. It blanks your screen, shows you a little graphic. When you type in your password, you regain access to your desktop. The command is, despite the package name, just XLock. The package name refers to the extra things, like the more things that are included in this as opposed to just XLock. You can choose what displays on your screen with the dash mode option. So if you want a specific animation to show up during the locking process, you dash mode and then the name of the animation. There are lots of animations to choose from, so you use dash dash help, like just XLock dash dash help, to view the modes. They're just listed as options or arguments really to the dash mode parameter. So Slackware ships with more than what you'd get otherwise. It has a J.R. Bob Dobbs icon from or graphic from the parody church of the subgenius, and Tux the penguin Linux logo. I couldn't figure out how to show them though, so XLock dash mode Bob didn't work. I thought that seemed intuitive, didn't work. The Bob graphic is called like L dash Bob, like the graphic file itself. So I thought maybe XLock dash mode L dash Bob. That didn't work either. I don't know. Maybe there's a mode that just displays an image of your choosing. But if so, I could not find that mode. I looked through them all and maybe I just missed them because there are a lot. And there is also a mode that just displays a blank screen. So you can, if you don't want a graphic, you can just say XLock dash mode blank and then it just goes black. By default, XLock just uses a random algorithm and just shows you, like, loads a random animation. It never loads blank. So if you want blank, you do have to specifically say, you know, type XLock space dash mode space blank. All right, next up is XMMS. This is a music player. I've heard that it is like Winamp, which I've never used, so I don't know. But it seems to appeal to people who have fond memories of Winamp. That's what I've noticed online. It's a pretty old app, and as with a lot of those old apps, the controls are tiny on a modern screen, and many of them are hidden, by default anyway, in a tiny little drop-down menu. Or rather, the drop-down menu is normal size, but the way you access it is just practically hidden. It's a little icon in the top left of the control panel, at least for me. I guess it could depend on what theme you're using too, but I think I might just be using the default theme now. I think I just reverted to that. Anyway, in the main menu, if you find it, there's the options submenu, and in that menu, there's a double size item which magnifies the player control panel. It does get fuzzy, so it's not like vector and resizing itself beautifully. It gets fuzzy and pixelated, but it is at least a little bit easier to read and navigate initially. Once you kind of get used to it, you don't really have to see what you're doing. I found you can just kind of click in the general area and it works, but initially you might want to use the double size. I did use XMMS as my music player for a very long time. Like that was a player that I really, really liked. I still like it. I have kind of defected to Audacious, which is kind of a fork or an iteration of XMMS, and you can actually theme Audacious to look like XMMS if you want. I don't, because I actually like the larger controls of Audacious. So there's not a whole lot to it, you know, like XMMS doesn't try to do anything too fancy. It does read, it has awareness of metadata and it can use the metadata information, but it doesn't belabor metadata. It doesn't have a concept of a music library. It doesn't try to keep things organized for you. It doesn't have a back-end database that it tries to maintain, listing all of your albums by all of the different attributes that it could possibly do. It just doesn't do that. You open a playlist editor, which, by the way, is not double-sized, even if you do have your player controls double-sized. You can do that with either Alt-E or from that little hidden main menu. And then you can just drag and drop music you want to queue up for playing from your file system into the playlist, and now and then press play. Done. That you're now listening to music. It's nice. I like it. There's also an EQ control panel with a bunch of useful presets. I used that quite a lot because I would often be using like some variety of headphone or earphone or something, and sometimes the balance just doesn't, you know, you get too much treble or not enough bass, whatever. So the EQ controls I used actually quite often. And as I say, you can theme it. You can make the control panel look a lot of different ways. They're all small. They're cluttered. It's atrocious. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know why no one has come up with one that's just a little bit bigger, maybe, and a little bit cleaner. But I guess people probably aren't really doing that many XMMS themes these days. But anyway, you can find that in the hidden main menu under options, then go to preferences. No, sorry. You don't go to preferences. You go to the skin browser. That's where you find that stuff. Preferences does exist, and you can use that for, you know, other things, ostensibly for like changing the font size and stuff like that. But to be perfectly honest, I didn't have any good luck. I didn't have luck with that. I tried to increase the font size, but maybe, I don't know, maybe I have the wrong combination of keywords or something, and it defines the fonts in that weird X11 sort of format where it's like name of font asterisk dash asterisk dash asterisk dash asterisk font size dash asterisk dash, you know, it's just so weird. It's a pain, honestly. It is a good player. I would be happy to use it again, but probably realistically, like if I also had Audacious on that system, this theoretical system where I only have either Audacious or XMMS, I would just use Audacious because it does balance quite nicely, I think, controls you can easily see and navigate with the same kind of low overhead in terms of music management. Next up is XPaint. Getting very close to the end here. XPaint. I feel like I already covered this. Did I not cover this in the X directory? Maybe not. Well, XPaint is a paint program. I don't have a whole lot of great things to say about it, but I mean, let's talk about this, right? So, I mean, this is obviously one of those X applications. I imagine it was probably really useful when it was first released. I don't know when it was first released. I don't think it performs that well today, like literally speaking, like the drawing tools, they lag behind your mouse noticeably. Like you're drawing and you're seeing where your mouse was populate pixels. It's a little bit disconcerting. You feel the lag. You can see the memory buffering almost, you know, when you're working with photos. Like when I moved a photo and it like sort of ghosted. It kind of like had this weird ghost effect rather than just, you know, dragging a picture around your screen. It kind of like you could see it buffering. Okay, your photo was here and now it's here. It was noticeably poor performance on a very modern system. To me it kind of felt like almost like I was using some kind of sort of front end for image magic, you know, like a something maybe written in Bash or something, you know, like, oh, here's a GUI and you can do things, but when you do it, you have to wait for us to issue the image magic command to like adjust and reload the file or something. With that having been said, it is still manageable. And there's a beauty to that. You can do stuff with XPaint. It does work. It's not pleasant if you compare it to GIMP or Krita, but I think it's important to note that it's a functional application and it does the thing that it says. It doesn't excel at it, but it does it. And I don't know, that's a low bar, you know, like, well, you didn't crash. But I don't know, there is something beautiful to that and kind of reassuring. Like, if they stop developing Krita and they stop developing GIMP, we'll have XPaint, which honestly fills me with a sense of dread. But I like that at you know, like, you can kind of revert. You can just kind of say, you know what, it was nice to have the nice things, they're gone, but if I want to invert a photograph, I can still do that. And that's kind of cool. XPaint kind of impresses me in a weird way, but not in many ways. Few of the tools in XPaint work the way that you think they're going to work. And I think it's a fascinating study in really kind of like poor design. Like every tool, every filter requires a pop-up window for further instructions or selections. Just trying to draw a line it's a mystery. Or I should say it's not a line. That's part of the mystery, is the conceptual words and the concepts. But anyway, let's say that you want to draw something on a photograph. All right. So, I mean, because that's what I did. I loaded a photograph and then said to myself, I think I'll draw an arrow, just a freehand arrow. It's going to look terrible, but that's what I'm going to do. So first you click the pencil tool in the top right corner. Makes sense. That brings up the tool toolbar. So you select the pencil that you want. Then you click the line button in the top right, which brings up a window full of text fields. So you can type in the pixel size you want, presumably the pen to be. And then you click OK. Then you click the brush style, which brings up another window. So you can choose the brush style. And then you close that window. And then you try to draw over the photo and you end up moving the photo instead of drawing on it for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know why that happened. Literally, I took the pen that I just, with like 6 or 8 mouse clicks, I selected this thing and I set it up. I click on the photo and the photo moves as if though I had a move tool. I clearly had a pen tool equipped. I don't know what happened. All right. This is not an emergency. This is not a disaster. We can recover. Go to edit, select undo. It did not undo the move. Just didn't undo it. Just, I don't know why. It just didn't undo it. I did the undo action several times. No effect. Okay. Start over. File, revert. Restore the file back to its original state. And now the pen does draw. So somehow I guess the photo had gotten selected. I don't know how. It wasn't anything that I consciously did, but there it was. So now the pen is drawing, but not at the correct line size. And that's when I realized that the line size only applies to specific tools, and that what I really needed was a paintbrush tool, not a pencil tool. So, I mean, it's stuff that you can learn after spending enough time with the application, and now that I've said it, like, okay, now I know, like, I got it. But in terms of intuitive design and clutter, the XPaint is a real kind of disaster. It's a difficult application to navigate, like mentally and physically. It gives you information you don't need. It hides information you do need. And I mean, this is why in later iterations, I'm assuming this came out before GIMP and Krita. This is why in later years, like we discovered innovations like, hey, let's have a tool options window or panel in GIMP and Krita, where, and Inkscape for that matter, where you see options for your active tool, the tool that you have selected. Now you see the options for it, but you don't see the options for every tool all at once. I don't think XPaint is gonna stay on my computer. I don't see a whole lot of use for it. I think if I was looking for a simple pixel painter, I'd just use MT Paint or Color Paint. If I was looking for a photo editor, obviously I'd just use GIMP or Krita or Image Magic. I can't see myself using XPaint. I'm going to remove it, remove PKG XPaint. But it is a fascinating application to kind of spend some time with, because it does. And I don't actually mean this in a terribly mean way. I mean, I'm saying mean things, so I guess I do mean it in a mean way. But I mean, I'm just saying it is a fascinating study in kind of like where we were and where we are now. And I mean, that's an important thing to do. Like, I don't want to throw XPaint under the bus, but like, it is a good example of kind of like some of the ways that, yes, if people saw that and said, that's open source, okay, I'll pass. Like, I wouldn't blame them. Like, that is a tough sell. Now, I will say that presumably when XPaint was a thing, its competitors, the other things that existed at the time probably weren't that much better, honestly. Like, applications in general have come a long way. You can't look at like Adobe Photoshop and pretend like, oh, well, probably version 1.0 or 2.0 or 3.0 of Adobe Photoshop was just like the one today. It totally is not. So everything's come a long way, and XPaint is part of that history. Next up is XPDF, an excellent lightweight PDF reader. I mean, truly excellent, par excellence. From my perspective as a frequent user of Ocular, this XPDF works exactly the way I'd expect. The page flow is set to continuous, or at least I think by default, or maybe I've just set it to continuous. So it flows continuously in a vertical line. So you can just scroll through the PDF document. You can, well, like with your mouse wheel, it's not like, what was it, GV, where you couldn't even use your mouse for like really anything. No, this recognizes what a mouse is. You can scroll along a PDF, but you can also adjust the view so that the pages are side by side in case you prefer that. Some PDFs are laid out that way, and they look better that way. and you also have a very wide screen, so it makes sense. There's a table of contents, or bookmarks, technically speaking, in PDF lingo, over on the left. And then there are controls like your page selection and your zoom and combo boxes along the top toolbar. And the even zooming, like you can just hold down control and zoom and that zooms in or out, you know, whatever way you're scrolling. So that's nice and modern feeling. XPDF is also technically a tabbed PDF browser. It won't look like it, but it actually is. It doesn't have tabs like you would think of a tab like in a console or Firefox, but it does have a little file list over in the top left of the XPDF window. And then there's a button under that little list, which, I mean, when you first open it, if you've opened an empty window, you don't see anything. If you've opened a PDF, you'll see that PDF listed over on the left. Underneath that window, there's a button labeled tab, or actually plus tab. So you click the plus tab button, and that creates a new empty entry in the tab list. And then you go up to file. Well, you make that your active tab. I can't remember if that happens by default. And then you go to file. It does, actually, yeah. You go to file and open a document, and that opens it in that tab. So it's a little cumbersome because that's like two steps. One, create a tab. Two, open a document in the tab. Instead of just one, which would be one, open a document by default in a new tab. But it is a nice feature when you need it. I usually don't use that feature in XPDF. Usually XPDF is kind of the one that I go to when I want to focus on one PDF in a terminal or from a terminal. I don't know. I very rarely launch Ocular from the terminal for some reason. I always launch XPDF. I don't know why. And really, I should use XPDF more. Nothing against Ocular by any means. I love Ocular. But really, XPDF is just a beautifully simple little PDF viewer that renders PDFs really, really quickly. So companies publishing tabletop role-playing games frequently publish rule books as PDFs. Very, very few of them are technically adept. So their workflow for providing both a printed book and an quote-unquote electronic book is just to publish the PDF that they sent to their printer, which means there's lots of background images, lots of high-resolution images, lots of vector data. It's a huge, huge file, like hundreds of megabytes PDF files. And they just distribute them to people who purchase their books. That's your ebook. You know, it's like, this won't load on any device I own. Like, these are huge, or they'll load, but they'll take literal seconds to render each page. But XPDF, I don't know what it's doing. It just doesn't care. You can scroll through a huge PDF. There's no load time, no waiting for pages to render. The performance is outstanding. I literally don't know how it does it. It's really, really nice. I am highly recommending XPDF. And I mean, to be perfectly frank, if we're being honest, I would probably recommend it over like Ocular and Events on GNOME. It's a really nice PDF viewer. So check it out if you haven't. Really try it. It's not an ugly interface. It's like a basic interface, but it's like a modern looking interface. Basic, but modern. And it is just really nice on performance. I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. We'll come back, finish up the XAP directory. And then I think we're going to move on to XFCE. I have coffee. Actually, I'll be honest. I had coffee already. I've had coffee sitting here on my desk. I do this to myself sometimes. I think, well, I'm going to go record a podcast. I should get a cup of coffee. So then I'll get a cup of coffee, thinking for some reason that I'm going to have time while speaking into a microphone to stop and take a sip of coffee, which I never do. So this cup of coffee is actually pretty cold. It's a kind of a cold-ish cup of coffee, which I do not like. Do not like cold coffee. It's not something I enjoy. So I should like go reheat it or something, but that sounds like a lot of work. So I'm just going to drink this cold cup of coffee. But don't worry. I mean, it's fine. It's good. It's okay. But but in the future, I should definitely remember, you know, in the three more podcast episodes I have to record before ending the show entirely, I should remember not to do that. I should get coffee during the coffee break, drink it, and then go back on. Okay, so next package, X-Sane. We've talked about Sane before, two episodes ago, maybe three? It stands for Scanner Access Now Easy. It's the main driver for most flatbed scanners on Linux. X-Sane is a graphical front end for it, and it's a very capable app. I wouldn't say it was pretty, like ScanLite from KDE, but it is good. It might be a little bit more complex than ScanLite, which may be the first time I've ever called a KDE application less complex than something else. So when you launch X-Sane, it first scans for devices, and then it drops you into a multi-window setup consisting of a preview window and a settings window, and maybe some image adjustment controls, but that might be because maybe that's how I left the application when I like last used it. Because like four windows opened for me, and I get the feeling that actually two of those are not always on. So I think part of this might just be, you know, a remnant of the last time I used this, which has been a while. But in the settings window, you can choose the output file location and file name and file extension. So it knows what to save your image as based on the extension you choose, .jpg, .png, probably .webp, hopefully. You set the scan mode, either gray or color, and maybe make a few adjustments based on, well, nothing yet, but we'll get to that in a minute. So you could press scan to just blindly scan whatever's on your flatbed scanner, but more likely you'll go now over to the preview window and click acquire preview. And that shows you what's actually on your flatbed scanner. And then based on that preview, you could adjust brightness and hue, contrast, the white balance, the levels of the shadows, and so on. Or you can save that for post. It's up to you. You can also choose a different color range. By default, it's just like normal, you know, full color range. But if you were scanning like a film negative or something, you could choose to do that. Or a slide negative, which is different. You could choose to adjust things for that. So you have a couple of different like modes that you can use. Or again, you can do it all in post. Anyway, once you're ready, you can click the scan button to scan the image. It saves to your hard drive where you specified, and you're done. You've just scanned an image. You can create presets for a specific device. So if you have more than one scanner, you could have a special profile for each one. Like if you knew that, you know, that scanner always scanned a little bit on the dark side, then you could brighten that one up and save that as your preset for that scanner. And then another scanner maybe is fine with neutral settings, and so maybe you save that as that profile and so on. Like I say, it's not quite as pretty as ScanLite, and frankly, some of the settings just aren't things that I ever use. I do everything in post pretty much, so generally I wouldn't need that. It does feel a little bit cluttered, a little bit rudimentary, but it is a powerful application. I could imagine using it in an environment where I had multiple scanners. I think that would be really useful. So it is a nice application, but yeah, I'm going to stick with ScanLite myself. Next up is X Screensaver. It's all in the name, folks. It is a screensaver for X. I cannot remember the last time I've seen an install of X Screensaver that hasn't warned me that it's out of date, and insecure, and really, really needs to be updated. Like it always warns me of that on the little launch screen, and I can appreciate that. Like in a busy environment where data is sensitive, I would want to know about that vulnerability or that perceived vulnerability or possible vulnerability. I do remember experiencing glitches a long time ago on screensavers where, you know, sometimes a user would get like just a quick flash of the screen, just like on a failed password entry or something, you know, or if you wiggle the mouse just right, it would blink and show you the contents of the screen, that kind of thing, which seems like a pretty bad, like that's why I had a screensaver on, or one reason I might have had the screensaver on. These days, I have to admit, I don't need a screensaver. I very, very rarely use one, and then much less X Screensaver, because like I say, every single install of X Screensaver yells at me and says that it's out of date. I could imagine just using XLock maybe, because it feels a little bit simpler. I mean, like, X Screensaver, it's got a lot of possible animations. I mean, so does XLock, but I mean, I would just use XLock-mode-blank, I think. But I mean, in real life, I do have my work, the laptop that I own is my work laptop, and it is running Fedora with GNOME on it. And it's really the only computer that leaves my house. So if I'm using that and I am walking away from it for some reason where there are other people around, I mean, I don't really even do that often. I just, it's a laptop. You can just fold it up and put it in your backpack. So if any of those things were true, I guess I have done it. I mean, I was at a co-work location that I sometimes use. So I, you know, there are occasions where that would be useful. But then I just end up using whatever GNOME uses, which I guess is probably some function of GDM, I would imagine, which again, isn't really a screen saver. It's just a screen lock, which is all I would really need. I never understood what screen savers were actually for. Why wouldn't it just go blank? Like, I don't understand the animation thing. X screen saver can be fun though. I mean, it does have a lot of silly animations that you could put. I mean, some cool ones as well, but I mean, some of them are just weird and kind of like look like they're from the 90s or, you know, early 2000s. So, I mean, if you want that in your life, X screen saver can provide. I probably won't be using it anytime soon. I'll probably remove it, to be honest. Remove PKG X screen saver for me, but not necessarily for you. It can be a fun thing to try. Okay, getting into the really silly applications now. This one is X Snow. This plays an animation of snow falling, complete with Santa Claus's sled and his reindeer, or sleigh. Is it a sled or a sleigh? He moves across the screen. So this is animation that happens on your root window, so on your desktop. So they don't fall or fly on top of the windows, like over your windows. They're just on the desktop. But the cool thing is, the really fun thing is that like the snow, it starts to gather along the bottom edge of your screen. I mean, it melts pretty quickly, so it doesn't ever like fill your screen with fake snow. But it's really cute. It's just the gentle snowfall and all manner of other decorations, like I say, including Santa. There's a surprising amount of configuration options for this, for a silly little application like this. You can adjust the intensity of the snowfall. You can adjust how much of it gathers at the bottom of the screen, the size of the flakes, the size of Santa's sleigh. You can change Santa's sleigh to a train instead, with no Santa, just a toy train. You can add a little scenery, like some houses and some trees and a polar bear and some reindeer. I don't much care for those decorations myself. There's also something called celestials, and apparently you can compose celestials, and I cannot figure out what those are or where they appear. One is called wind, so I thought, okay, well, I'll see little like animated like wind things maybe, but I never did. I didn't see that. So I'm not really sure. One was called Halo or something. Yeah, I never saw anything from that. So I don't know what that is. But the most fun part, I think, is when snow starts to gather on top of, like at the top of a window decoration. So yeah, when you have a window, that nothing like ever transgresses over your window. But on the top of the window, as if though it was a physical object, snow does start to gather. So you have little snow mounds on the top of your window. And then when you move or close the window, the snow on top of it is disturbed and then it starts to fall. And now that the window's gone, it is mesmerizing to witness. You'll just sit there opening and then waiting and then closing the windows just nonstop, just to see that satisfying moment where the snow continues to fall. It's really, really cool. Is it worth the resources required for it to run? I don't know. I remember I tried a funny decoration app along this sort of vein a long time ago. I think it was called like Amore or something like that. Now, admittedly, this was on a PowerPC Debian machine. So this could have been like very specific to that architecture. It was a real beast to configure. So it could have just been with that setup, but it was generating so many errors that it literally filled up var log to such an extent that I could not boot my computer because there was literally no disk space left. And I had to spend hours trying to figure out what was wrong. And when I finally started thinking, well, I should look at the logs, I ended up booting off of an install disk to remove the logs so that I could then boot my computer. It was really frustrating. I don't know that X Snow would ever result in that kind of disaster, but I do confess to being a little hesitant to dive into these like little frivolous desktop animations based on that experience way back in 2008 or 9 or no, 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 it was a 2011, sorry. Anyway, this one is pretty darn charming. I'm not even a Christmas person, you know, don't really care one way or the other about the Christmas season. I do love the winter, though. I love snow. I love ice. So I could see running X Snow and that train set during the winter just for fun, definitely. To be honest, I'd actually rather probably just run Open TDD, the Open Transportation Train Manager thing. It's a game about toy trains. You build tracks and have the trains go, pick up customers, drop off cargo, things like that. And you can run that with a winter theme. So I could just run that. But the problem with running that is that it's very distracting. Because, you know, you can set up a train route, and that's fine, but then you want to improve it, and then you want to improve it some more, and then all of a sudden you're playing the game instead of working with a nice calming train set running in the background. So X Snow could be a kind of a gentle alternative to that. And that's it. That's all for XAP. That we're out of applications. XAP, we're done. We are into the next and I think penultimate folder on our list, which is XFCE. And this one I was kind of dreading for a while because I'm not really an XFCE guy. I mean, I've used it before. I've run it here and there, but I mean, I don't spend all day in it. But luckily, I saw that coming. And so months ago, I started running XFCE on my virtual machine, which sounds like, oh, well, that's not even using XFCE. But actually, no, for this podcast, I use my virtual machine of Slackware quite a lot because that's where I test all of the things that I'm going to talk about. So I was in XFCE for months, and I have a pretty good feel for it at this point, I think. There are those who swear by XFCE. They love XFCE. They can't imagine why they would ever run anything heavier than XFCE, because XFCE is considered fairly lightweight. Now, to me, XFCE doesn't really seem that lightweight. I mean, Fluxbox seems pretty lightweight. When you launch it, you don't even have anything on your screen, practically. But XFCE is considered fairly lightweight, and I think I agree with that sort of assessment of it. It is probably one of the lightest of weights desktop that you can have and still have a desktop. I mean, that may not be strictly true. I don't know. I haven't like monitored the memory usage and the CPU usage of XFCE and then compared it to something else like Razer QT or whatever they're calling it now. If they're even calling it anything, I haven't checked in with that project in a while. I should do that sometime. Anyway, don't know how lightweight it really is, but it is, it's a little bit sparse, it's a little bit minimal, but it's never so minimal that it sort of betrays your expectations. So I still don't know if I'm an XFCE fan in the sense of like, why, I mean, let's put it this way. I'm still not running it on my main PC. It's not on my laptop. But right now I have the luxury of running GNOME and Plasma Desktop. And I'm kind of the mindset of if you can, then why not? So I'm running the biggest and most sort of sparkly desktops just because I have the luxury to do so. I feel very confident that if I go rescue a laptop out of a dumpster, should I find a dumpster in a town of 400 people in New Zealand, in the South Island of New Zealand, if I find a dumpster and I find a laptop in that dumpster, I could rescue it and I could run XFCE quite comfortably. And I would run XFCE on it because I'm assuming that this laptop ended up in the dumpster because it is very old and couldn't handle like modern sort of desktop environment. XFCE gets you the modern desktop environment with really a lot of savings, I guess. Again, haven't actually monitored it to determine whether that's true or not, but that is definitely the feel that I get from it. So we're in the XFCE directory now. We'll talk more about, obviously, the desktop itself, but we have packages to get through. So let's talk about the first one in the list, which is a capital letter, and so it's first, even though it's not alphabetically first. It is Greybird. That is, appropriately, the default desktop theme for XFCE. XFCE on Slackware at least includes Greybird, and then Greybird Dark, Adwaita, I don't know how to say that one, but that's the GNOME theme and the dark version of that. And then Breeze, which is the KDE Plasma Desktop theme, and Breeze Dark. And then, of course, High Contrast, which is the fallback, I think, for everything. Is that right? I don't know if High Contrast is a fallback. High Contrast is probably High Contrast. Anyway, if you haven't looked at XFCE in a while and you have kind of the picture of like a boring gray kind of like Windows, probably, I don't know, Windows 98 theme or something, or maybe 95, I don't know, whatever gray was gray, and you do care strongly about appearance, then Greybird, contrary to its name, might persuade you to stick around. It is a very attractive theme. It's got dark panels and dark system menus, along with like your normal kind of off-white backgrounds in your file managers and all the panels and things like that. Now, I prefer a dark theme myself, so I switched over to Greybird Dark pretty early. I love it. It's very attractive. It's a lot better than that old, you know, sort of plain GTK theme that XFCE used to ship with. It feels like GNOME or Plasma Desktop, just in terms of like the visuals. Like, it doesn't act like those, but it when you look at it, you think, oh yeah, okay, cool. Dark panel, dark background, dark theme. Got it. We're on a modern desktop. I don't see a disconnect between Greybird and the GTK or Qt Windows I launch in XFCE. Like, if I launch Dolphin in XFCE, I don't stop and think, oh my gosh, my Greybird theme, desktop theme, doesn't match that Qt window. I never do that. So I probably wouldn't bother changing from Greybird to like Breeze myself. But like, if that's something that you notice and you think, no, I need my desktop theme to match, you know, either GTK or Qt, then you could do that. They're available, they're here, and I appreciate that they're there, because unified theming is definitely, I mean, that's, for some people, that's something that they notice. And I mean, I notice it to some extent eventually, but on XFCE, I don't know, Greybird just seems kind of sharp enough to just kind of fit in with whatever you launch. So it didn't really bother me one way or the other. It does use its own icon set, which conveniently is the next package, elementary-xfce. This is the icon set from Elementary Linux, but it's a fork of that icon set maintained by the XFCE team. Elementary is another one of those that I haven't checked in with lately. It was a really nice Linux distribution. Strongly, highly recommend that one. I mean, they just do such a great job. I hope it's still around. Elementary.io, a thoughtful, capable, and ethical replacement for Windows and Mac OS. Yeah, this is beautiful. Give me a break. I mean, I'm not going to use it because I think it's based on Ubuntu, but I mean, it is really neat. It's really nice. Anyway, the Elementary team, I guess, had their own icon set. I can't really tell one or the other. Icons have started to kind of just all look the same to me, which is a weird thing to say because it used to be such a thing that I would notice, and now I just don't even bother noticing practically. Weird. But they had their own icon set, and I guess XFCE decided to fork it and maintain it themselves. I don't know why. Don't know the backstory there. Maybe they just needed more icons that Elementary did not need. I don't know why they wouldn't have just contributed those. I don't know. I'm sure there's a good reason. This is the Elementary-XFCE icon set. Next package, EXO. EXO is basically sort of a convenience library for application developers who are targeting XFCE. So apparently XFCE itself, I mean, like the development libraries and stuff, they've got a bunch of stuff for the desktop. You know, like if you're writing stuff for XFCE, the desktop environment, but what they also wanted to have available was stuff that for people writing applications that would run on XFCE. The header files, just kind of glancing through them, seems to provide access to like configuration options, enum types, icon chooser, thumbnail functions, things like that. So I don't, that to me kind of sounds like it's blurring the line between the desktop and an application. But here's probably a good example. It does ship with two executables that like I could see users using. So one is, I guess the one that really is the best example of what I'm talking about is exo-desktop-item-edit. This opens a .desktop file, which is the configuration file that kind of defines an application launcher on your system. And it opens that file in a graphical editor, like a GUI editor, so you can change the displayed name of the application, the comment that goes along with that, like in a tooltip, the icon, and permissions and things like that. I wouldn't say it's like amazingly useful, but it's a nice convenience command to have. To use it, you can type like exo-desktop-item-edit, and then the path to the application launcher you want to modify. So like exo-desktop-item-edit /usr/share/application/gftp.desktop. And now you're editing the attributes of that application launcher. So is that an application development convenience function, or is that for your desktop? Or is it a little bit of both? Maybe a little bit of both. There's also the other executable is exo-open, exo-open, and that just opens an application in whatever default application you've defined. So to open like a text file, you might know that you want to do Emacs, myfile.txt, but maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. Or maybe it's a file type that you don't, you're not super familiar with, or you don't know what someone has on this particular system that you've just sat down at. You want to open up an EPUB. What's that going to open in? Who knows? exo-open migrate book.epub, and now exo-open figures that out, or your MIME type settings figures that out. I love this kind of command. This is, I've said this before. I mean, I think that we Linux users really, really ought to reserve some of these commands for actual everyday usage. Like the command open, O-P-E-N, that should be this. That this shouldn't be exo-open. It should just be open, and it should just do exactly what this one does. It opens a file in the application that the user has said that's the default application for that file. It is so intuitive. I mean, it's to the point of being painful that there is no open command. And the same goes for install, right? That's one I've harped on a lot before, like install. That's just, you just think install. That's the command to install something, right? Nope, it's not. Should be the word help. That should bring up more than just, what does it do? Like something about like bash commands or something, or bash functions. It's just, it's the worst. Like there are just things that people would obviously think would be true. And for some reason, we're not using those for what they are. We're not even redirecting people to what they would think that it would be. It's just, it's frustrating, I think, is what it is. Next package is Garçon, and Garçon is the menu system for XFCE4. It used to be something like, I don't know, lib XFCE GUI menu or something like that. It was a different library, and then Garçon came along and kind of standardized according to the freedesktop.org menu specification, kind of just reinvented all the menus for XFCE4. What that actually means to you and me is probably not a whole lot. Maybe it parses some of the application categories better. Who knows? But that's what Garçon is, something that you're not going to directly use, but that it's nice to have it on the system. libxfce4 UI and libxfce4 util. UI, the library for XFCE4 UI, this is a library that helps developers share little widgets between like applications and components of XFCE4. So it's a bit of a framework library, whereas libxfce4 util is, I guess, probably technically similar, except that it's not UI related. It's other stuff. I don't know what other stuff exactly, because I don't program for XFCE4. I'm not a developer of XFCE, believe it or not. But yeah, there's a bunch of header files like fileutil and generics and kiosk and license, POSIX signal handler, resource, UTF-8, and things like that. So I gather their functions for, yeah, like backend technologies. And then finally, for the last package of this episode, we're going to do is Mousepad, which is a little text editor. And I've got text editors that I like, plenty of them. I think they're great. I've got too many, really. Emacs I like, Nano I like, Kate I really like, but not enough to use. So I mean, there's just a bunch of editors out there. And I think, in a way, after all, you can't have too many. Like this is the just a basic text editor. And I've said before, like sometimes a basic app is really important anyway, just to kind of just as a demo of like, this is what an app looks like, not just for the users, but also for developers. And I mean, text editors aren't exactly, they're probably not as simple as you might think to program, or maybe you don't think they're simple, but I mean, they appear, you know, you open a text editor, it's a blank screen with a menu. How hard can it be, right? It can be sometimes pretty complex, but even if it's not that complex, I mean, just seeing how, you know, what class do I use to get a window on screen? Like what class do I call for that? What is a window? What's the menu bar like? How do I define the items in a menu, and so on? So like all those things. It's good for developers to be able to look at that and see what's being implemented. It helps a developer learn not the language, but like the frame, the toolkit that they're about to use, like the XFCE4 sort of framework structure. You need to know the details, and that helps when you have something simple enough that it can be contained in, you know, just like a couple of files. So that's one reason to appreciate Mousepad. But the other one, honestly, is that there's just a shortage of people's understanding of what plain text is, which if you're a Linux user, you probably think that just seems like, how can people not know what plain text is? Surely we've all opened a terminal and done a cat on a binary file and witnessed how miserable that is. So how could someone not understand what a plain text file is when they've seen the difference between a binary and a text file? Well, a lot of people haven't. You know, like, it just doesn't, people don't realize it. You can say plain text and they'll give you a Word document and insist that, honestly, all that's in that document is plain old text. Like, I just put text in there. I didn't put anything else. You know, it's like, that's not what I meant. Like, I need plain text, like no markup, no nothing. I just need plain text. So I think that simple text editors that actually save to plain text, it's such a valuable tool to have a lot of, because you need to have lots of choices so that people can choose the one that they like for whatever rationale they have. Like, if Kate looks too complex for them because it's got that cool little side scroll panel on the right, then they don't have to use that. They can use Mousepad. If Mousepad is too sparse for them, maybe they would like, I don't know, Kate. Or what's that one that I keep forgetting? It's not Proton. Pulsar. Pulsar. Pulsar is great. Pulsar, which used to be the Atom editor, but of course, obviously, Microsoft would have discontinued the Atom editor in favor of VS Code. But luckily, it's open source, so people have continued it as Pulsar. And if they don't like that, then maybe they could try Nano or Emacs or Notepad QQ or, you know, whatever. Like, they're Gedit. Don't forget about Gedit if that still exists. Or whatever GNOME is calling their editor now. You know, lots of choices. They all save to plain text. You can write HTML. You can write C. You can write Python. You know, whatever you're working on, plain text. I love that they exist. I think we can't have too many of them, as long as they are good. XEdit, we could probably do without. But I mean, that's enough about X. The X applications are beautiful. More beautiful than that is Mousepad. It's a great little editor. It is really basic, which is, I think, one of its features. Like I say, Kate can sometimes be a little bit overwhelming because of all the different, like, the different options. Mousepad has options, really great options, like the essentials that you would think, yeah, I want that in a text editor. They're not all on by default, I don't think. The one that I'm thinking of specifically is line numbers. You go to view, go to line numbers, and suddenly you have line numbers. But if you're a person who doesn't want to see the line numbers, if that's distracting or confusing, it's okay. Turn them back off. It's fine. It does have a nice little icon toolbar that you could view at the top. It's got a status bar optionally at the bottom. All of these things you can turn them on, you can turn them off. It's got word wrap, auto indenting, adjustable tab sizes. It does have markup or syntax highlighting, rather. It calls it confusingly file type, but I think I say it's confusing because I think, well, why wouldn't you just call it syntax highlighting or something like that? But file type actually makes sense. Like, maybe, okay, so Mousepad doesn't know that I'm writing in, where's DocBook? There it is, DocBook. But I could just tell it that I'm going to write in DocBook. And that's kind of nice because, I mean, Emacs, to be fair, you can either execute that yourself, or you can just open a file ending in a known file type, and then it does it automatically. But if you're just starting from scratch, you do have to activate that yourself, just like as you would here in Mousepad. So yeah, there's, you know, just sort of enough feature, I think, to make people who live in text editors comfortable enough, but also to make it easy for people who aren't used to text editors to just focus on exactly why they're here, presumably plain text. There's also increase and decrease indentation functions. That's always nice. And then obviously there's preferences where you can set all of the things that you could set in the menu, but you can set them by default here. that's kind of all there is to mousepad, which, again, that's a good thing. A nice simple application for text is definitely a welcome addition to a desktop, in my opinion. And that is the XFCE version of your plain old boring text editor. Couldn't be happier with it, except that I don't use it. Like I say, there's so many text editors out there, you just can't use them all. It just wouldn't make any sense, but it's nice to have. Someone appreciates that. So that's it for this episode, I think. After this episode, we have, I believe, 3 more episodes to go. I could be wrong. There are a lot of components in XFCE, but some of them I probably don't have a whole lot to say about, so they might go quickly. And there is a cheeky little BSD games package, which I happen to know contains a lot of little games. Although a lot of those games, like the X games, aren't really like very complex games. I mean, some of them are, but some of them just they're going to go fast because there's just nothing to them. Like, how much can I say about what is it? Fortune, I think, is one of the games. So, you know, there's some of these are not really, really games, but some of them are. So yeah, we'll talk about more XFCE in the next 3 episodes. Then we'll talk about BSD games over the course of either one or more episodes. And then GNU World Order will sign off forever. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep the source open.
There are no Z-rays. The practitioner who used it was as big a phony as his device.